Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Anna Mateo. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, Jair Bolsonaro was elected Sunday to be the next president of Brazil. Results showed that the Social Liberal Party candidate won 55% of the vote over Workers' Party candidate Fernando Haddad. His presidency may help build stronger relationships between Brazil and the United States. U.S. President Donald Trump called to congratulate Bolsonaro on his victory Sunday night. American officials say Bolsonaro and Trump spoke of a strong commitment to work side by side on issues affecting Brazil, the United States, and beyond. Bolsonaro has been a longtime supporter and fan of Trump. In July, Bolsonaro said of Trump, "Just like he wants to make America great, I want to make Brazil great." Bolsonaro ran a campaign that promised to change what he sees as a corrupt political system that has forgotten ordinary citizens. His insulting comments about gays, women, and minorities have pleased his followers. They think of him as not afraid to speak the truth, even when it may offend some people. Bolsonaro told Reuters last year before his candidacy, "Trump faced the same attacks I am facing, that he was a homophobe, a fascist, a racist, a Nazi. But the people believed in his platform. I was rooting for him." Bolsonaro has already made plans to change Brazilian foreign policy. Following the lead of the United States, he has said he will move Brazil's embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Similar to Trump, Bolsonaro is rethinking his country's membership in multinational organizations and agreements. That includes the Mercosur Trade Group, the BRICS Group of Large Developing Economies, and the Paris Climate Agreement. Those changes would undo 13 years of diplomatic efforts led by the country's Workers' Party. Party leaders worked to build relationships with Brazil's South American neighbors and other developing countries. Bolsonaro is also questioning Brazil's relationship with China. China is Brazil's biggest foreign buyer of soybeans, iron ore, and other goods. But Bolsonaro is worried by recent Chinese purchases of Brazilian energy and public service companies. "The Chinese are not buying in Brazil, they are buying Brazil," Bolsonaro has warned repeatedly. Such talk is likely to please Trump. Recent U.S. taxes on Chinese goods have started a trade war between the two countries. Many people blame the U.S. for unsettling supply systems and economic markets worldwide. Bolsonaro plans to turn a number of Brazil's state-owned companies into private companies. He also wants to ease environmental restrictions to make room for more mining and farming. Experts say that, like Trump, Bolsonaro was able to use voters' fears and dissatisfaction with the government to win the presidency. Brazil now struggles with high levels of crime. In recent years, An investigation into government activities found corruption at the highest levels. One former president is in jail, and another was removed from office. And Brazil's economy has yet to fully recover from a large recession. More than 13 million Brazilians are unemployed. Bolsonaro will take office on January 1, 2019.
Germany's Angela Merkel says she will not seek a fifth term as chancellor in 2021. In an announcement on Monday, Merkel also said she would step down as leader of her conservative Christian Democratic Union, or CDU, party in December. Merkel, who is 64, has served as chancellor since 2005. She has led the CDU since 2000. Her decision to step down as party leader came after the CDU suffered setbacks in local elections in recent weeks. Merkel currently leads Germany as part of a grand coalition of the country's biggest political parties. These include the CDU and its partner in the southern state of Bavaria, the Christian Social Union, or CSU. The center-left Social Democratic Party, or SPD, is also part of the coalition. Her current coalition began its leadership in March after 6 months of difficult political negotiations. Her party's latest election setback happened Sunday in the central state of Hesse. Merkel's CDU party narrowly finished in first place while suffering an 11-point drop from the last election in 2013. The SPD also suffered losses. Sunday's voting followed a state election in Bavaria 2 weeks ago, in which the SPD and CSU also suffered major setbacks. The losses came as support has increased for Germany's Green Party, as well as the anti-immigrant Alternative for Germany, or AfD. Merkel told reporters in Berlin that after leading the CDU for 18 years, she felt today it is time to start a new chapter. Merkel added that she would not aim for any other political office. Observers had widely expected that Merkel would not seek another term in office after 2021. But her announcement marked the first public confirmation of it. I'm Brian Lynn.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. When trying to make a successful career, which is better? Being a generalist or a specialist? In other words, should you generalize and know a little about a lot of things? Or should you specialize and have a deep understanding of only one area? Well, that depends.
So when we think about generalizing versus specializing in our career, we're really talking about, can you do a broad number of tasks versus do you drill down? and do one specific thing really well.
That is Natasha Olinger. Olinger is a human resource expert in Washington, D.C. She talks about the benefits of both. However, the main reason for specializing is an important one: more money. To explain her way of thinking, Olinger uses a fairly common situation: choosing a restaurant. Say you want to eat a favorite Japanese meal, sushi. If you go to a restaurant that only serves sushi, you can expect high-quality products, and you should also expect to pay more. If you go to a place that serves sushi, tacos, and pizza, the quality of the sushi may not be so great, but the prices will probably be lower. Olinger says the world of work is not all that different. However, she adds that all is not perfect in the world of the specialist. If there is a drop in economic activity, or possibly a recession, a generalist may get more job offers. So, are some fields best for generalists and others for specialists? Olinger says the size of the organization can be more important than a sector or industry.
I would say the biggest difference in terms of is it better to be a generalist or a specialist is more the size of the organization oftentimes than the sector. So smaller organizations tend to need more generalists, and larger companies tend to need more specialists, and this is oftentimes regardless of industry.
So Olinger suggests thinking about the size and type of business you would like to work for. Small businesses often need people who can do many things. Also, companies that are just getting started often need people who are able to perform many different tasks. For example, your job description may be that of a graphic designer, but you may also have to do some writing. A person who can do many different things is often called a jack of all trades and is able to wear many hats.
I would say think about the type of organization in which you want to work. If you want to work for a smaller organization or possibly a startup where, you know, you're going to have to kind of wear all different kinds of hats, then you would want to focus more on generalizing and learning kind of a broad set of skills.
Larger companies can be just the opposite. They often need specialists, experts in a given field. In fact, they may require that you stay in your lane, meaning you do your job and nothing else. When planning your career path, the best advice might be to know yourself. Some people like to know a little about a lot of things. They might lose interest in working on the same thing day after day. These people might be happier in a career that lets them perform different duties. But what if you really love learning everything there is to know about just one subject? You like the idea of being an expert. In that case, it is probably a good idea for you to specialize. However, if you are preparing to specialize in something, you had better make sure that you really like it. But perhaps the best solution is a mix of generalization and specialization. Some career planners call this a T-shaped career. The top of the T would be the generalized part. The upright stem of the T would be the deeper understanding of a person's general knowledge, their expertise. Olinger agrees. She suggests that combining the two may be the best answer. She notes that a lot depends on where you are in your career. It may be easier to be a generalist when you are younger, and then slowly specialize as you get older. However, experts advise workers to keep their skills up to date and be willing to make changes when needed, no matter what industry you work in or how old you are. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Harry S. Truman. He became President of the United States in 1945, a few weeks before the end of World War II in Europe. Truman took office after Franklin Roosevelt died suddenly of a cerebral hemorrhage. Roosevelt had been president for 12 years, but Truman was new to the position of vice president. Two other men had earlier served in the office under Roosevelt. On April 12, 1945, less than 3 months after he became vice president, Truman was called to the White House. There, Roosevelt's wife, Eleanor, told Truman about her husband's death. Truman was quickly sworn in as president. Shortly after the ceremony, the Secretary of War privately told Truman about a secret project involving American scientists. They were building an extremely destructive atomic bomb. Historians debate whether Truman already knew about the project or whether the information was a complete surprise. In either case, the new president had to decide whether to use the weapon, which he called the most terrible bomb in the history of the world. Harry Truman came from simple beginnings. He was born in the state of Missouri. He, his parents, a brother and a sister, lived in the town of Independence. As a boy, Harry Truman helped his father on the family's farm, but he did not enjoy the work, and he could not play sports because he could not see very well. From the time he was a child, Truman wore eyeglasses. So he developed his interests in reading and music. He was an especially good piano player. Truman was also a good student, but his parents did not have enough money to send him to a four-year college. Instead, Truman worked in a number of jobs, including as a bank clerk, mining company operator, and partner in an oil business. When the United States became involved in World War I, Truman decided to rejoin the National Guard. His guard unit became part of the U.S. Army, and Truman earned a position as a captain. Truman experienced real success in the military. He was an able soldier and leader, and he and his troops fought in battle. When the war ended, Truman kept both the feeling of self-confidence and the friendships with the other soldiers he had formed. One of Truman's first acts after the war was to get married. He married a woman from his hometown. They had been romantically linked for a long time. Her name was Elizabeth Wallace, but she was called Bess. The Trumans remained happily married for more than 50 years and had a daughter named Mary Margaret. In the first years after the war, Harry Truman opened a men's clothing shop with a friend from the military. But the shop, called a haberdashery, eventually failed. Truman soon found a new line of work. an operative from the Democratic Party, asked Truman to be a candidate for a position as a judge. Truman won the seat, as well as a public reputation for being an honest, effective public servant. In time, Truman successfully won election to a seat in the U.S. Senate. For the most part, he earned a good public image there, too. He supported the social programs of President Roosevelt, and he tried to prevent big businesses or large labor unions from misusing public money. Both voters and Democratic officials liked Truman enough to accept him as the party's vice presidential candidate in 1944. Truman performed well as a candidate, but he did not have a close relationship with Roosevelt or play much of a part in his government. Yet in a few weeks following Roosevelt's death, Truman was leading the country. Truman faced a number of difficult decisions during his two terms as president. Many of them involved foreign policy. His actions helped shape the second half of the 20th century. In his first months after taking office, Truman watched the end of World War II in Europe. He then had to decide how to deal with the war in the Pacific. Japan did not want to accept the Allied forces' demand for total surrender, and Truman did not want to extend the war. So he approved using the atomic bomb on Japan. Truman directed the Secretary of War to drop the weapon on military targets and try to reduce civilian deaths. But the destruction was still terrible. An estimated 192,000 people died in the attack or the effects of the bomb in Hiroshima. Most of the city was destroyed. 3 days later, the U.S. military dropped another atomic bomb, this time on the city of Nagasaki. More than 70,000 people died instantly. The Emperor of Japan called the weapon a new and most cruel bomb. He agreed to his country's surrender on August 14, 1945. World War II came to an end. Truman and his government quickly had to make other decisions about how to react to the new international situation. One of the most pressing concerns was the Soviet Union. Soviet officials sought to expand their influence around the country's borders, especially in Eastern Europe, Turkey, and Iran. Truman and other U.S. officials believed those moves threatened American interests. The United States supported democracy and capitalism. It did not want the Soviet Union's form of communism to spread. So Truman's government put in place two measures to answer the Soviet Union's influence. One was a policy known as the Truman Doctrine. It promised American support to Greece, Turkey, and other democratic nations against authoritarian forces. The measure was a new step for the United States. In the past, the country had tried to avoid conflicts that did not directly involve it. Under Truman, the U.S. government was committed to helping free peoples anywhere by improving their living conditions. A second measure came to be called the Marshall Plan, after Truman's Secretary of State, George Marshall. Marshall wanted the United States to invest a large amount of money in rebuilding Europe after World War II. Because the Soviet Union controlled much of Eastern Europe, the money eventually went to improving the market economy of Western Europe. The Office of the Historian at the State Department notes that one effect of the Marshall Plan was to introduce foreign aid programs as an official part of U.S. foreign policy. Truman also sought to guarantee peace and contain communism in other ways. He supported the United Nations, which was officially launched during his presidency, and he negotiated a military alliance among Western democratic nations. The group became known as the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO. Military alliances became especially important in 1950, when communist forces in North Korea invaded South Korea. The UN agreed to send troops to help South Korea, although many of the troops were American, and they were led by an American general. Fighting in the Korean War lasted until 1953. As many as 5 million people died in the conflict. Neither side gained much territory. But the Korean War had other effects. It fueled the Cold War between communist and democratic forces. It showed the U.S. would really defend other countries against authoritarian forces. It sharply increased American spending on the defense industry, and it helped make President Truman very unpopular. Many Americans believed Truman was losing the battle against communism. During his presidency, the Soviet Union successfully tested a nuclear weapon, and China officially became a communist country under Mao Zedong. Some U.S. lawmakers even accused Truman's government of protecting communist spies. Senator Joseph McCarthy was the most famous of these critics. He launched investigations against thousands of U.S. government employees, as well as movie actors and directors in Hollywood. McCarthy did not have evidence that these people were secretly working for the Soviet Union, but his campaign helped fuel the public's concern over communism, a fear that came to be called the Red Scare. Truman grew tired of the accusations, as well as other political battles. He decided not to seek re-election in 1952. Instead, he retired with his wife to their home in Missouri. At first, many Americans had mixed emotions about Truman's presidency. For the most part, they did not support the Korean War, and they remained suspicious that his government had included communist supporters. But Truman's public reputation rose over time. He became known as a down-to-earth person who would and could fight if needed. His supporters like to say, "Give 'em hell, Harry." Truman is also remembered for taking some steps toward ensuring equal rights for all Americans. Truman supported the racial desegregation of the military and banned racial discrimination in the civil service. But Truman is probably best remembered for the difficult decisions he made during his presidency, especially the one to drop atomic bombs on Japan. To the end of his life, he accepted responsibility for the decision and did not apologize for it. Truman died of natural causes at the age of 88. His remains are buried at his presidential library in Independence, Missouri.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world.
I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.